Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob and Yurt Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Today, the day of the great American eclipse, and the eclipse is over, and I'm not here. I'm not here in studio. Yes, this is Bob and Yurt, but with my family, I'm in Nebraska so that we could be in the path of totality to observe this eclipse, along with tens of millions of other Americans, for our work on Real Science Radio and showing the evidence for God as the creator. So it was important for me to be there. As a result, we pre-produced today's program. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to go over some news headlines in a moment, and then we're going to re-air for you our first eclipse program from Real Science Radio earlier in the month. So let's begin first with the news. Of course, the major issue of the past week has been racism. And what I'd like to do here, we spent last week giving the six main reasons for racism. And I'd like now to describe the two most systematic examples of racism in the United States. What are the two most systematic examples? The second most, we'll start there, the second most widespread and open form of racism in the U.S. is black hatred of whites and of other groups, which goes almost completely unopposed within the black community. That is the second most widespread and open form of racism in the U.S. Now, what could be bigger than that? Well, the single most widespread form of racism here is practiced openly by the mainstream media, most politicians, and the entire left. They treat blacks as subhuman by systematically pretending that they are incapable of racism, that they're incapable of being racist. So we have a comment here sent in from a listener, Johnny from Compton. Actually, it's Johnny out of Compton. Johnny used to live in Southern California, outside of L.A. in Compton, back when he first came across Bob and Yurt Live, would call into the show. And recently, he works in the tech industry, and recently his career brought him here to Colorado. So Johnny sent in this note on this topic. He said, Bob, it's just like you've said about the death penalty. If the death penalty were only to be in effect for one family in the nation, selfishly, I'd want it to be in effect for my family because I don't want my kids to grow up to become murderers. Likewise, if the culture was only willing to ever accuse just one group of being racist, I'd want that accusation to be hanging over my family's head, over my folks, because I don't want my kids, my neighbors, to grow up to hate people of other races. What a brilliant point. So there is a double standard in America, and the double standard by the media, the left, the liberals, all Democrats, the double standard is in favor of helping whites and hurting blacks. And the double standard is this. In the white community, racism is absolutely unacceptable. And I am so thankful for that standard. That's a phenomenally fabulous standard. The tragedy is the double standard in the black community, racism is expected, so much so that it is hardly opposed within the black community itself. Hardly. Okay, so on to the second news item. Donald Trump, if you've watched conservative media recently, you've seen video audio clips of him repeatedly condemning racists, condemning neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and so on. And let me suggest to you that there's a reason why many people see that as insufficient. It's not good enough. Let me put it in terms that a conservative can understand. Think about your own distrust of certain Muslim leaders who, when called upon, dutifully condemn terrorism, right? We get so upset because the Muslim community, from our perspective on the outside, it's not sufficiently anti-Islamic terror. We want it to be more. And so when a member of a mosque ends up committing a terrorist attack and the imam of that mosque is interviewed and he says, of course, we condemn terror, and we all feel a little bit let down by that, like it's just not good enough. When you're called upon and you dutifully condemn terrorism, it just doesn't seem to be sufficient. Such an imam would need to make himself the enemy of Islamic extremists. If he could make himself the enemy of Islamic extremists so that they hate him too, even to the point of making himself and his own mosque vulnerable to attack by Muslim terrorists, because that's how aggressively they would then fight against them, well, then at that point, many more people will accept that such Muslim leaders are not just providing lip service or verbal political cover, but they really do oppose Islamic terror. Now, likewise with Donald Trump. As we called for in our post-Charlottesville programs beginning on Monday last week, beyond mere words, Donald Trump must make white supremacists hate him the way they hate everybody else. When neo-Nazis themselves see Trump as an enemy, then more of his opponents, notice I only said more, I didn't say most, but then more of his opponents will drop that particular criticism. Now here at Bob and Yurt Live, we produced the Donald Trump pro-life profile. So we've opposed him from the beginning for substantive moral reasons, including that he's fully funded the U.S. abortion industry so far until October 1st by completely matching Barack Obama's abortion funding priority. Yet for millions of others who care nothing about the dismembering of unborn children, nor about those babies killed with chemical weapons and so on, because of their Trump derangement syndrome, even if the president aggressively makes himself an active enemy of racists, they will still accuse him of supporting those same racists. It's just the same as the substantive actions Trump has taken that have angered Russia, in contrast to Clinton's and Obama's appeasement. That does nothing to cause the Trump derangement syndrome sufferers from reconsidering that particular accusation. But regardless of that, it is an appropriate goal. Donald Trump should become an aggressive enemy of the racist so that they end up hating him also, so that they don't endorse him, support him. Okay, now continuing with the news. You may have noticed that you're being invited to fewer weddings, and it might have nothing to do with your personality. Studies are showing now the numbers are in, and the number of Americans getting married, while it's nowhere near as decimated an institution as it is in Europe, the number is significantly decreasing. So we have an article at kgov.com/marriage. which in part is the government's role in marriage. And when Christians buy into the argument that the government has no role in marriage, you just have to be married before God, they're forgetting about the unbelievers, because unbelievers need to be married also. And adultery is not only a sin, it's also a crime. And so a marriage contract is not just between you and God. It's between you, God, in the whole world, because everyone needs to, under the law, recognize the boundaries of a marriage and not violate those boundaries. So it's tragic that even unbelievers, they need to marry for the sake of their children. And they need to marry because it's yet another command given by God. Okay, so now what else is in the news? Half of the Detroit mayoral candidates are felons. Half. Half of all the candidates running for mayor in Detroit are felons. And, I mean, this really is not inclusive of them. Why? First of all, why is it only half? Second of all, there's one who had been charged with attempted murder, but there's nobody who's an actual murderer. There are no murderers running for the mayor of Detroit. I mean, talk about being bigoted and exclusionary. Come on, Detroit. You can do better than that. Now, California, they got their third official effort to secede. And I think, as conservative Christians, I think we should lend our voice in support, encourage California to secede. Then we could attack them, take them over, make them a territory, and they don't get to vote anymore. So go ahead, let California secede. Then we attack, and then things will get better for everybody, including Californians. Also in the news, from the environmentalist wackos, the people fearful about global warming, it turns out that dogs and cats have a major effect on producing carbon dioxide and warming up the planet. And Americans own more dogs and cats per capita than any country in the world. We are ruining the climate. So your pet, say goodbye to Fluffy and Fido. Say goodbye. Liberals are insane, right? What's a liberal to do? And now here in Pennsylvania, there's a bridal shop that refused lesbians. And so things are really heating up for this bridal shop. Do you remember that the homosexuals said, they said this loud and clear. They said, we just want to be left alone. That was their mantra. We just want to be left alone. And here on Bob and Your Live, we've pointed out that in the public square, Christianity and homosexuality are mutually exclusive. One or the other will be in the closet. So then the homosexual says, oh, no, really, we just want to be left alone. Oh, yeah, and you better bake us a cake or we'll sue you. And you better bake us a pizza pie and cookies. And all these, by the way, each of these I'm mentioning, they all have to do with lawsuits, government action against you if you hesitate to obey any of these demands from homosexuals. You better send us flowers, give me a haircut, take some photos, and forget about your heterosexual student clubs. Forget about heterosexual doctors. Forget about boys-only Cub Scouts. And forget about your morally straight Boy Scouts and adult Scout leaders. Forget about all of that. And also now, forget about your father-daughter events. They're bigoted. How dare you have a father-daughter event? Forget about your heterosexual dating services, your heterosexual college sports programs. We've decided to ban them also. And oh yeah, didn't we tell you? You're going to print us some t-shirts. You're going to provide the floral arrangements. You're going to sign our marriage certificates or else. Then, as a church, you're going to host our wedding. Yep, even on your church property. And if you don't, we'll take you for everything you've got. And we want a parade. Believe it or not, that's a lawsuit too. We want a parade, and you're going to provide security for us. And a few last things. Don't forget our subpoenas for your sermon transcripts. That was in Houston. Remember that? And you better remove those sections from your Bible. Otherwise, you can't print them in Colorado. Because remember, the government has passed a law to censor your objectionable speech. And so now in Pennsylvania, this bridal shop said, we don't want to promote homosexuality because, well, we love you as our neighbor. We don't want to help to destroy you. And that's it. Now they'll go after them. Okay, what else is going on in the world? Well, there's a lot less extreme weather over the last 10 years. since Al Gore's film, the first film, came out. Second film has come out. It's been through much of the East. It's been a cold spell. It's part of the weather phenomenon known as the Gore effect. Whenever Al Gore has some major event, you end up with below freezing temperatures and blizzards and cold records and icebreakers being abandoned and on. So the August chill was just ahead for most of the USA when Al Gore's movie was released and went bust. What was it, 16th at the box office on its opening weekend? It couldn't happen to a nicer guy. And global temperatures are cooler now than when Al Gore released his first Inconvenient film. Okay, anything else in the news before we get back to the eclipse? North Korea is apparently working feverishly to modify their submarines to launch nuclear-capable missiles. So that we've known about that as a threat for a long time. There's recent satellite imagery showing that it looks like that's exactly what's going on. And that's it for the news of the day. Now to the eclipse, which today was the big news. And again, with my family, I am in Nebraska. We went to be under the path of totality. Today, the great American eclipse, probably the most heavily viewed astronomical phenomenon in the history of the world, and certainly the most heavily studied because it's crossing the entire continental United States from Oregon to South Carolina, an almost two-hour event, and it will be getting darker for about an hour and a half. Then if you're within that 70-mile-wide region, you'll have totality anywhere from a few seconds up to a few minutes. And then it will be another hour and a half where gradually the day will become brighter again. So temperatures are going to drop. This is a very sad day for the global warming alarmist. And we're going to join our Real Science Radio show now, where Fred Williams and I talk through the eclipse. We spent most of the show discussing the amazing astronomy discoveries regarding the sun, the moon, Earth, and the other planets which support creation and falsify evolution. The materialist, atheistic, stellar, and planetary evolution claims. Evidence against the claim that the solar system originated by natural processes, that claim, it's called the nebular hypothesis. The evidence against it includes, and Fred and I will talk about this now, that the axis of the sun's rotation is not the same as the plane of the planet's orbits. The planets orbit in what we call the ecliptic. And if the sun and the planets all form from the same rotating gas cloud, a nebula that condensed, we should all be rotating and orbiting about the same plane. But the sun is 7 degrees out of alignment with the plane of the planets. That's phenomenal. That falsifies the nebular hypothesis. And it's one of 1,000 pieces of evidence pointing to a special creation. The sun, if it condensed from that spinning gas cloud, the nebula, it would have a tremendous amount of spin energy, angular momentum, but it doesn't. The sun is missing nearly 100% of the spin that it should have if it condensed from such a cloud. And the planets have nearly 100 times too much spin energy. And in addition, along with the many astounding examples of fine-tuning of the solar system and of the Earth, one of the simplest examples is what enables the total solar eclipse, namely that the sun is 400 times further away than the moon from us, and it is 400 times the diameter of the moon. So because of that beautiful, perfect 1-to-1 ratio, 400 to 1. Because of that, 400-1 in size, 400-1 in distance. Therefore, when the moon happens to come between the sun and the earth, we could experience a total solar eclipse, and that opens up our minds to understanding the physics of the galaxy, of the universe. So this was such an enjoyable program from Real Science Radio. Let's now hear it again.
Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Welcome to Real Science Radio's program on the Great American Eclipse.
That's right. Today we'll talk through the coming eclipse.
Oh.
Big, huge event. But first, some of the science contrasting creation versus evolution.
Ooh.
That is the materialist, atheistic, stellar, and planetary evolution claims.
They use that term evolution, right, even for astronomy?
They do. They do.
So this is a creation versus evolution show on the eclipse where we're going to first talk about the science before we get to the actual August 21st eclipse. When you came in, Fred, you warned me, make sure you've got good viewing glasses.
That's right, because you could actually go blind looking at a solar eclipse because the sun's rays can still definitely damage your eyes. In fact, NASA put out some warning that make sure you buy the right kind of sunglasses. So I asked you, because I know you're going up to Nebraska, right?
Yeah, that's
right.
Because
it's going to make its way through Nebraska. And they warned to make sure you buy the right kind of solar glasses.
Yes, and at Denver Bible Church, in fact, we've purchased eclipse viewing glasses to distribute to the congregation, especially for kids. Being a homeschool church, you know, we have so many kids. And even though we're a small congregation, it's the little church that could. For those who are staying in the Denver area and not traveling to that narrow strip of totality, Denver's going to get, I think, over 90% coverage of the sun.
Yeah, so you only see about 10% of the sun for a brief period of time.
Yeah, so people are going to want to look. So you really have to be careful. Also, Homeland Security is involved, all levels of law enforcement, first responders are preparing. Why is that? Because, Fred, from Oregon to South Carolina, about 20 miles wide, this narrow band, tens of millions of people are going to be going to see totality.
Yeah. And they've listed, you know, a lot of the websites have listed the major cities. For example, Casper, Wyoming.
Yeah.
That's one of those places, if you go there and you watch the eclipse, you'll probably definitely want to then just come home. I lived in Casper, Wyoming for 2 years.
Well, we
sorry for any Casper, Wyoming
natives.
Well,
we just went to the Grand Tetons, to Yellowstone.
Oh, that's beautiful up there.
Yeah, what a beautiful state, Wyoming. But you can't get a hotel room. The very few where people have canceled are being relisted for $2,000 for two nights.
Yeah, so the eclipse is going through the Grand Tetons?
Yeah.
That'd be super
cool. It's up that way,
You already
Jackson
have a beautiful
Hole.
View of that area. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. But it's going to be very difficult to get there and to get back. The gasoline industry is stocking for this like it's a 4th of July weekend on steroids. So if you're traveling, don't get stranded. Don't run out of food. Don't run out of water. You know, bring enough sunscreen and hats, and especially take care of your kids. Don't let them look at the sun before the eclipse, during, after. You got to really monitor them. During totality, you could look without glasses, but then all of a sudden, after, say, 2.5 minutes, or depending on where you are, then that sun's going to appear. You got to be careful.
But there won't be a totality here in Denver.
No.
So you don't want to be looking at the sun.
No, not at all. So some of the science first and the creation and evolution aspects of the mathematical ratios that enable this eclipse in the first place. And then, Fred, if we could talk about the major solar discoveries of the most basic details about the sun in the solar system that point to the creator and that disprove the claims of materialist origins.
That's right. And I know you've got a great video, right, on the Big Bang.
Oh, I love
And one of the parts in there is about the nebular hypothesis. And this is the atheistic view of the origin of the solar system. And they claim that a swirling gas cloud eventually condensed and formed our sun, the planets, the moon, and so on.
Yeah.
So what's wrong with that?
Well, there are so many problems, Fred. For example, the angle of the spin of the sun's rotation compared to the planets orbiting the sun, big problem. The amount of spin of the sun, the angular momentum that the sun is missing almost 100% of the spin that it should have. And you know what else is interesting? The fact that we can see a total solar eclipse at all. I mean, how is it that we can see, how is it, Fred, that we could see a total solar eclipse?
Well, it's really cool. It's because the sun is 400 times larger than the moon and 400 times further away. That's what allows us to see it. I mean, it's remarkably, you know,
fine-tuned.
Rare. There's no way that
it's
this has happened by chance.
Tuned. It's one of the many examples of the fine-tuning of the solar system. So let's dig into this first one regarding the angle of the sun's rotation. The atheists had hoped that it would line up with the ecliptic. You know, when their theory was developing over the past few centuries. Well, if it all condensed from a spinning gas cloud, it should all share similar characteristics of their spin, their angular momentum.
It's a law of physics.
Yes, but it turns out that the sun is 7 degrees off of the ecliptic. That is a massive problem.
And how did that happen?
Well, think about it. If the atheist, the materialist, the methodological naturalist, if they were right, and you got this swirling gas cloud condensing, then everything's swirling with the same characteristics, right? And so then somehow you've got to take the planets and their orbits collectively and change them by 7 degrees compared to the sun. I mean, the planets have enormous angular momentum, even Mercury and Venus, Earth. But think of Jupiter and Neptune, those gas giants. How do you take all the planets, which are all over the place in the solar system, you know, on one side of the sun, on the other side, and you're going to bend all of their orbits or rotate them 7 degrees? Or alternatively, you take the sun, which is a ball of gas, and you're going to tilt that thing.
Yeah. It's the liberalism of angular momentum. That's the physics, right? Instead of the conservation of angular momentum.
Right. It's the let your angular momentum do whatever it wants to do.
To satisfy your worldview.
So that is a problem, one problem, with the materialist explanation. When they give their programs about viewing the eclipse, they're not going to remind people that the sun's rotation is off what their theory claimed it would be. They're not going to remind people. But I like to remind people, as you and I have done, about NASA's planet guy who admits that
I remember this one.
Their theory of planet formation has failed. And this is quite a quote from Mike Brown. He's an astronomer, right?
Yep, at Caltech. And he was talking about a lot of problems, not just this tilt problem.
He was talking about many other problems.
So many other problems. And he said this: we thought we understood the formation of planetary systems pretty deeply. It was a really beautiful theory and clearly thoroughly wrong.
And he's NASA's planetary database manager. So he's a big shot. You know, we brag about our Google rankings probably too often, Fred. But one of the ones we've never mentioned is our ranking for the origin of the solar system. If someone is wondering if there's evidence against the nebular hypothesis, if they search for that term, evidence against the nebular hypothesis, out of hundreds of thousands of possible pages, Google ranks us up there on page one, which is pretty cool. But if they Google something like solar system origin problems or solar system formation problems, Real Science Radio is ranked number one out of 2 million possible pages.
2 million possible.
Yeah, that's just so fun.
That is super cool. And for any new listeners who are tuning in, you know, maybe because they're wanting to prepare for the eclipse and get this great information from our show.
Yeah.
But if you go to rsr.org/rankings, we have plenty of other examples. And here's just a few.
Yeah.
Big Bang predictions. That's number one
out of millions.
Out of millions.
If want to Google for the predictions of the Big Bang Theory.
Yep, Big Bang predictions.
Wow, Real Science Radio is number one? Yep. Come on, Fred.
Yep.
Wow.
Evidence against the Big Bang. Numero uno.
Number one out of millions.
Creation science predictions. We've made a few on this show, right, that have come true over the years.
Quite a few.
We've been able to confirm them you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the road.
And what a list we have.
Yep.
Yeah.
Number one out of millions.
Ah.
And then here, I like this one. A lot of people, you know, might not think much of this one, but the 360-day year. I'd say if you're not familiar with that topic, go to rsr.org.
We hear from people around the world, and they're searching for information on the 360-day year or 360-day calendar, and they find us right at the top, number one.
Great article.
So let's go to now a second huge piece of evidence for creation and against the nebular hypothesis. That's the claim that this all formed from a spinning gas cloud. The second piece of evidence is that the sun is missing nearly 100% of the spin that natural formation would have imparted.
That's right. And there's that one atheist guy, Isaac Newton.
Atheist?
Oh, wait, he wasn't an atheist.
No.
He is a creation scientist.
Yes.
He actually spent more time studying the Bible than he did science. But anyways,
Young Earth creationist.
Yeah, young Earth creationist. Widely regarded, I'd say, as maybe the most brilliant scientist ever.
Yeah, he's considered to be that.
Yeah. So Newton rejected the claim that gravity could condense a gas cloud into our sun and its orbiting planets.
Wow.
This is the discoverer of gravity.
You know, we should include a link in this show summary to the Newton Project. Britain has this online repository of all of Isaac Newton's extant writings. And we could link to his letter of February 11th, 1693, where he made this clear that swirling gas gravity would not form a star and planets.
So today's atheists, they reject Newton's insight.
Yeah.
They have to develop all these secondary assumptions to explain why the sun is rotating at the wrong angle.
Mm.
And then they have to explain why it is only about 1% of the spin energy or the angular momentum of the solar system.
Yeah, so it should have 99%. So the sun is massive, you know, literally, it's massive. And it has about 98 to 99% of the mass of the solar system. So if this spinning gas cloud condensed to form the sun, then it should have about 99% of the mass of that cloud, which would become the sun. And that means it should have 99% of that spinning angular momentum of the whole system. But it only has 1% about of the spin.
Wait a minute. It's supposed to have 99% and it only has 1%.
One.
It's not like 96% or 95%.
No, it's like 1%.
It's like the opposite. It's like
the
inverse.
Yes. And the planets, which comprise less than 2% of the mass of the solar system, they should have less than 2% of the angular momentum. But Fred, they have almost 99%. So these are massive observations. They're really, really big discoveries. And they are the opposite of what the atheistic origins folks have claimed. And they don't tell people about this stuff. It's hidden. It's not on NPR Science Friday. It's not on the Discovery Channel, National Geographic. I mean, hardly ever do they list all these astounding contradictions to their own assumptions.
So again, the atheists are rejecting wisdom. Isaac Newton was right. I mean, you couldn't get more plain as day as this. The sun is supposed to have 99%, yet it only has 1%. The planets are supposed to have less than 2%, you know, near the 1%, yet they have 99%.
So
everything's upside down.
So it's not the creationists who don't make good science predictions. It's the atheists. They have a dismal track record, and predictions are the currency of hard science. And that's why when Google ranks us number one for, like, Big Bang predictions— that is significant, Fred, because we give the actual history and the colossal failures of the prediction of these atheist models of origins.
So you're listening to Real Science Radio and not fake science radio, because that's what you get with all the atheists.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, and frankly, a lot of the stuff NASA puts out and, you know, definitely the secular science. You're not going to read about this on Science Daily or any of those secular sites.
No, generally not. Right. It's suppressed in the extreme. Mm-hmm. So folks could read or listen 2-hour list of solar system formation problems. But since we're talking about the sun, the moon, and the earth, Fred, why don't we list a few of these quickly?
Okay. Well, for one, planets would not form because, as admitted in Nature magazine in 2013, according to the standard theory, dust grains orbiting newborn stars should spiral into those stars rather than accrete to form planets.
Okay, that's the journal Nature just a few years ago. There's so many examples like this where they say, you know, really, this theory shouldn't work.
Yeah.
It really shouldn't work, but lo and behold, there's Jupiter. There are these planets. There's the sun. There's the moon. Okay, how about this? Even if the laws of physics enabled planet formation, which they contradicted, 4.5 billion years is far too little time to build up large planets. And most of the stuff that we reference, Fred, most of the discoveries are from mainstream science institutions. Most of it, even a lot of the analysis, is published in leading scientific journals. And we link to all this stuff.
Yeah. When we refute this stuff, I'd say 95% we're linking to their own articles.
Yes.
How about this one, Bob? Uranus rotates perpendicularly and Venus rotates backwards.
Yes. They violate the laws of angular momentum. Of course, you could come up with wild secondary and tertiary and quaternary, I don't know what goes next, explanations, rescue devices to say, well, here's how this would happen in this one instance. And then you find out there's hundreds of instances that they have to make wild secondary and tertiary assumptions to explain why the solar system doesn't look like their theory predicted it would look like.
Yeah, it's amazing. Because, again, I like the one, you know, Venus rotates backwards. I mean, how do they explain that?
Yeah.
It totally goes against the physics of their proposal.
It does not
work.
And
it's not even a good hypothesis.
And when you add to it that the sun hardly rotates at all, it's almost standing still compared to the planets, and that the sun is tilted at the wrong angle, I mean, it all falls apart. And no wonder astronomer Mike Brown, who he was even talking about other problems, not all these problems, but he said our theory of planetary formation has clearly failed.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful story, and it failed.
Looks great in the textbooks. It fools a lot of people, but it's just totally wrong.
How about this? We've talked about the transient events in the solar system. If the whole thing was 4.5 billion years old, should we be seeing all these very astounding things happening? Such rapid changes, like our moon outgassing, when the moon is supposed to be 4.5 billion years old.
Yeah.
And they say, well, golly, that
should have. We're just really lucky, Bob. We're getting to see all this stuff that, you know, over millions and billions of years.
Yeah.
But we're lucky in this one period of time to see that. All right, remember that video? This is an Earth transit event. When that rock fell from that formation.
This arch, Arches National Park, this arch is millions of years.
Wow, how lucky we are to get to witness that.
Yeah.
Just think of the millions of years of, you know, the old cavemen.
And I think we documented like 80 arches falling in the past half century or so. And they're supposed to have formed over hundreds of thousands or millions of years.
Yep.
How could they be falling so quickly and have 80 formed in the last half century? No, they're not forming. At the rate they're collapsing, the Earth's transient events are just those on our planet. And all the planets have these things going on. So then how about the comets that are made up of millions of rounded boulders?
That sounds like a prediction I've heard of in the past.
That's right. That's a prediction
of some guy named Dr. Walt Brown.
Yes. Can you say Fountains of the Great Deep?
Yep.
I think that's pronounced HPT.
Hydroplate theory.
Yes. So rounded boulders form on Earth in floods. They don't form out in deep space, not in the Kuiper Belt, not in the Oort cloud. And they stunned the astronomers who got close-up pictures of them. And we now know, like on Comet 67P, comets have millions of rounded boulders, large, some like as big as your car. And so these are all examples of amazing, fabulous discoveries that falsify the atheist model of origins and affirm the book of Genesis and
Absolutely.
Its many implications.
And, you know, NASA for 45 years, which is a long time, they've been collecting lunar dust, right?
That's so nice of them.
Yeah, it is nice of them. Yeah.
For us creationists.
And what's funny
Thank
is
you, NASA.
It shows that miles, I'm telling you, not miles. Inches, should have accumulated over billions of years.
On the surface of the moon?
Yep.
And it's the old moon dust argument,
yep.
which is 100% valid.
Absolutely.
NASA was afraid that there'd be meters or hundreds of meters of dust on the surface of the moon in billions of years. Young Earth creationists were like, no, don't worry about that. And they get there. Now, they knew because of the missions they sent up previous to the manned Apollo missions. They knew that, okay, there's only a little bit of dust. But they sent it up with those pods, those feet, remember?
Yeah.
Because they thought
yeah.
it might sink.
And
in fact, they stated that that was one of the fears, that the lunar landing module might sink in the dust. That's another great argument.
It is. We had a great interview with Dr. Richter. Remember that? He was
Dr.
involved.
Dr. Henry Richter, yep. NASA scientist.
Yep, one of the early
and
scientists.
Others.
For, yep,
and
others. Propulsion Laboratory
yeah.
that became
Fabulous.
NASA.
Okay, so you mentioned the moon with the upcoming eclipse. How about the sun itself? Fred, how about just the formation of the sun? There are so many problems that are admitted, too, from time to time by the secular scientific world, these intractable physics problems with the formation of a star, including our own star, the sun.
So, Bob, consider this. What about when a gas cloud is condensing?
Okay.
So
it's shrinking.
It's shrinking.
By its own mutual
yeah.
gravity.
So if you think about that, it would increase the pressure and the temperature.
Of the cloud itself.
Of the cloud, which should expand the cloud, right?
Oh, yeah. That is really a problem because gravity is a weak force.
Yep.
And it's not going to overcome the increasing temperature, the increasing pressure as the cloud condenses. That's how they form stars. So, Fred, then they end up cheating. They say, well, you have this gas cloud, and there is a supernova somewhere where a nearby star explodes, and that pressure wave condenses.
It solves their problem.
Yeah, it starts this next star forming. Well, that's cheating.
Well, yeah.
We're talking about the origin of stars.
Yeah.
So you can't have stars already in existence.
Were there seven moons flying by at that time?
That's a funny one.
Sorry to pick on, you know, one of our crazy
catastrophic
scientists.
Plate tectonics. So... yeah, they have a difficulty explaining how stars would form because it violates the basic laws of physics. There's another problem with the rotation because, Fred, you know how we point out that our sun is almost standing still. Well, if you take the average swirling nebula, whatever it is out there in the galaxy, out there in the universe, say like the Eagle Nebula, and you begin to, it's massive, right? Could you imagine a gas cloud in space, how big it would be, and have all the mass enough to form a star. And then you're taking all those particles that are spinning around their mutual center of gravity, and you begin to condense them all like a figure skater pulling in her arms. And because it's being condensed, you're conserving angular momentum, the spinning becomes more and more rapid.
Yeah.
And then as it really condenses, which it wouldn't because of the laws of physics, but let's pretend that we're atheists. If it continues to condense, it's going to spin faster and faster and faster until the average star that formed from a nebula would be spinning faster than any object in the universe and faster than the laws of physics could permit it to spin. It would fly apart.
Yeah, they'd have to start all over.
Yes, right. Start all
never-ending cycle.
Yes.
Exactly. So, but every now and then they get lucky and it just forms a star.
Yeah, there's also the magnetic strength problem. The journal Science published what amounts to a parallel of the angular momentum problem. Here's what they wrote. Interstellar clouds are permeated by magnetic fields that we believe to be effectively frozen to the contracting gas. As the gas cloud collapses to form a star, the magnetic field lines should be compressed ever closer together, giving rise to enormous magnetic fields long before the collapse is completed. These fields would resist further collapse, preventing the formation of the expected star. Yet, we observe no evidence of strong fields, and the stars, allegedly, right?
Yeah.
And the stars do form apparently unaware of our theoretical differences. That's circular reasoning, right?
Oh, absolutely.
They're assuming their conclusion, even though there are so many laws of physics that prohibit their conclusions.
Yeah, and speaking of circular reasoning, they assume stars have already been formed or in the process of formation.
Yeah.
Just like the origin of species, right?
Yeah.
Darwin had to assume that species
already existed.
Yeah.
They do that all the time. Mm-hmm. Even with the formation of the universe, Fred, now they assume the existence of the multiverse, an infinite number of universes. Every time they want to explain complexity, they end up introducing more complexity. Every single time. And the things they want to explain the origin of, like genes, they begin with the modification of existing genes. Every time, they start with the thing they're supposed to explain already existing.
So, Bob, here's some more problems. And you can go to, by the way, rsr.org/star-formation-problems. Mm. So how about Population 3 stars, which are first-generation stars? They can't find any. They're missing. It's kind of like their dark matter. Where's the dark matter?
Yeah, the dark matter's missing. The first-generation stars are missing. How about the supernova remnants? Remember that?
Yeah.
The stage 3. Could you explain that? And then we'll have to conclude this on next week's show and talk more about...
Well, if the universe is billions of years old, we should see stage 3
supernova remnants.
But we don't. We only see about what we'd expect given our... timeline, right?
If the universe is less than 10,000 years old, then when a star explodes, the debris field, so to speak, gets to a certain size. Well, it should continue to expand indefinitely, and we should be able to find stage 3 supernova remnants. That's been predicted. They've been looking for them for decades, and they haven't been finding them.
Yep. And there's, yeah.
So there's those kinds of problems with the whole stellar formation theory, that whole claim.
Maybe the supernova stage ones are just, you know, transient events that they just happen to now start exploding.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So that we could see them.
Yeah,
in our small 10,000-year window out of billions of years.
Yeah, and of course that would contradict their theory
Absolutely.
Of stellar evolution.
They totally expect to see all these supernova remnants in stage 3.
Yeah, and missing... the population 3. It's weird. They call it population 3, but by that they mean the first generation of stars. And so those are missing too. And the blue star assembly line. There's so many great examples of how what we actually discover in the real universe contradicts what they expect to find in a Big Bang universe.
Yeah. And in your Big Bang video, you've got that great video clip from Fermi Labs. Of the scientists, he's actually explaining a problem and admitting to the problem of missing antimatter and why it's a problem and why they expect to find antimatter.
Right, our sun is made of matter, the planets, the Milky Way galaxy. In fact, every galaxy we know of, they're all made of matter, not antimatter. Antimatter is not science fiction. It's real. We make antimatter in the lab. Antimatter was predicted by theory. And we understand the positrons and the antiprotons and so on. Well, when you convert energy to matter, as in the Big Bang, half of that should be antimatter and the other half matter exactly. E equals mc squared. It should be exactly equal parts, and it's not. In fact, we don't have antimatter stars, antimatter solar systems, antimatter galaxies. They've been looking for this stuff for decades. And it's empirically excluded. They have not found it. It doesn't exist. So these are bits and pieces that end up forming mountains of evidence against the Big Bang and the nebular hypothesis.
That's right. So, Bob, in closing, I just wanted to mention kind of a bittersweet news here. Bittersweet in a sense, bitter that we lost a great creation friend, Dr.
Yes.
Ed Boudreau. He's the... He headed Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship for quite a few years.
Yes.
He's gone to be with the Lord. That's the sweet part.
He got a PhD in chemistry many years ago, and he
taught.
Professor
at New Orleans.
New Orleans. Yep. And he testified in a very high-profile court case about creation and evolution.
Yeah, in Louisiana. That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
So he recently passed away, and he's with the Lord now.
And what a dear friend.
Yep.
And it's been an honor that he was a Katrina transplant.
That's right.
From Katrina. The hurricane.
One of the advantages of Katrina was we got to have Ed Boudreau and his family up with us.
Yeah,
and
that's
helped run a Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship, you know, not long after he came up here.
Yeah, so he didn't miss a beat, in fact.
He didn't. He didn't stop.
And so now he's gone to be with the Lord and with his wife, who preceded him. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, she preceded him about, I think, about 6 months ago.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we'll miss him, but we'll all see him again.
That's right.
In fact, we'll all see everybody again at the Great White Throne Judgment. And then beyond, for those who love the Lord, will enjoy him and one another forever. That's going to be great.
Yeah.
And in just a couple weeks, I mean, that stuff, who knows when the Lord could return. But in just a couple of weeks from now, it's the Great American Eclipse. You know, the liberals don't like that name, the Great American Eclipse. They say that it's exclusive. How about the Mexicans? How about the Canadians? Aren't they Americans too? And I'm like, no, they're not Americans.
Yeah, they'll have no problem calling it the Mexican eclipse, because in 2024 there'll be another nice, you know, full solar eclipse.
Yeah.
You know, these things aren't super rare, actually. It's just so cool that it's going through the United
through
States.
Through the entire continental United States, from Oregon to South Carolina, right in the middle of the day, in its totality, through this 20-mile swath.
Yeah.
It's just awesome.
So if you're one of those end-of-the-earth conspiracists, you realize that these are actually fairly common.
Yeah.
But not in this way, you know. But, yeah, no, don't think this is the end of the world.
It's not the end of the world. It's a cool eclipse.
If you do think it's the end of the world, Bob and I would love for you to send all your stuff to Real Science Radio. We could use, you know, because we don't have a church behind us, right? We don't have this big, huge mega church.
No.
So we could use your funds since the world's going to end.
Fred, you know, I'm looking forward to the Lord's return. I hope,
oh, absolutely.
I hope it's today.
Yeah, yep.
The sooner the better for me. But in his wisdom, he knows. And the Father will decide, you know, when to send the Son back.
The last verse of the Bible is, come, Lord Jesus, soon. You know, so it's okay to pray for it. Sometimes I feel like I'm being selfish,
you
know.
I do hope and pray that it's soon.
Yeah.
And I know our kids want to wait till they get married. And every generation is like that. Sorry, kids. But when I have friends who are trying to convince me that we're in the very end of the last days, and I say to them, well, you've been telling me this for 30 years, so can you tell me when we're in the last minutes or the last seconds?
Yeah, don't tell me the last days.
Because we've been in the last days now for decades. But do you really believe the Lord is coming back in the next, like, few years? Absolutely, yes. Okay, then can I buy everything you own? I'll give you $1,000. Payable 5 years from today, 5 years. So you won't need it, right? You won't need it. And you get to use the $1,000 for ministry right now. Okay, payable 10 years from today. Okay, payable 20 years from today. You know, never.
I was going to say, has anyone ever taken me up on that?
I've been offering this for, like, I don't know, 25 years, Fred. No end times advocate has ever taken me up on it, which to me proves that they don't believe it.
Exactly.
They're trying to convince me so that they'll have a better chance of really believing it themselves.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
It's kind of that conspiracy mentality, you know?
They want a little bit.
I guess kind of misery loves company. Conspiracy loves company.
Yeah, that's right. But the Lord is coming back. We don't know when. We hope soon.
Yep.
And, you know, we always think, how could the world last another year? But imagine if we were alive in the 1940s in Europe.
Oh, yeah.
Or in much of the world. And you would think, this has to be the last days. God's people, Israel, they're being persecuted. And you would just think it had to be.
Yeah, and then Israel reforms as a nation.
Yeah. But
prophesied in the Bible. So you think, hey, wow, that just happened. It's the end of the times.
But here we are generations later.
Yep.
That was on May 14th, 1948. And here we are generations later, and all the big end times ministry leaders, they all went to be with the Lord. So they were right. They're going to see the Lord soon.
Yeah.
Not the way they thought, though.
Yeah, exactly.
So how do we get on that tangent? Anyway, I'm looking forward to next week when we'll conclude our show on the Great American Eclipse. Until then, this is Bob Enyart and Fred Williams for Real Science Radio. May God bless you.